Hello and welcome back to the There's a Floodlight That Never Goes Out podcast. I'm Tom. I'm joined by Will as usual, and I'm delighted to say that we're joined today by the one and only Robbie Knox. How are you, Robbie?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No worries.
No, it's all our pleasure. We want to get straight into it then. How did you first get into the job at Soccer M? Because it's not a normal career path, shall we say, because we know you went to Canada.
Yeah.
After you'd finished university. So how did you actually get into the job at Soccer AM?
So essentially, I did a student radio there called Livewire, which was a lot of fun. I'd done before podcasts, you had to go and do something like that if you wanted to do something mediary. So I did student radio, and a guy I met there, after I came back from Canada, he just finished working at a TV studio, and he recommended me for his old job. So I sent off a CV and got a job there. And I worked there for a year. And then the same guy was then working for Avalon, who were an agent. And they were Tim Lovejoy, who was the presenter and producer of Soccer AM at the time. They were his agent. And he knew through that they were looking for someone. And he knew that I watched Soccer AM. So he said, why don't you send them a CV? So I just sent off a CV, got an interview, and then got the job. So that's basically it. So essentially through connections, which is why you should always do stuff, and you never know what will happen from it.
Yeah. So
what do you think? Sorry, Will.
When you got your job at Soccer AM, what was your kind of initial role in?
So first role I had, I think, was called Production Junior. Yeah, Production Junior was the first thing, which was an unnecessarily demeaning job title. Sky had slightly weird job roles. Essentially, what I was doing was all the sort of props and costumes and stuff for the show, because we had quite a lot of characters that people would play on the show. So that was the majority of stuff. There were a few other bits like replying to letters and stuff like that and organizing stuff. But it was generally making sure everything was in place. So it was quite sort of high pressure for a job, because we'd have a meeting, a final script meeting from like 10 till 12 or 12:30 on a Friday. And then I just have the afternoon to get literally everything in for the show the next day sort of thing. But that was my role when I started. Then I moved on to other things after that.
Soccer AM then, what do you think made it so good? Because people talk about all the time now, even just on a Saturday morning, they go, those years when you were at Soccer AM and when Lovejoy's at Soccer AM were the prime years. What do you think actually made it so good?
I think there's quite a lot of things that came together to make it sort of what it was. I think we had a good group of people working there, which obviously is relevant. I think Tim and Helen were great presenters, and Tim was a great producer. I think a lot of shows came along and tried to do the same thing. Like every year there'd be a new football show on a different channel that was a bit like Soccer AM. But the mistake they all made was they were a bit nasty, like they'd make fun of things, whereas we would joke about things, but it was always in a positive way, whereas they'd quite often come from a sort of nasty angle. For example, if there was someone who did a horrific dive and won a penalty, we'd want to show it, but we wouldn't want to hammer the person who did it. So we'd show it and say, this is a horrific foul, I can't believe you didn't get sent off for this sort of thing, and turn it around. So you're sort of joking along with it. It's the same sort of thing. You're showing someone cheating, but you're not hammering them for it, sort of thing. So that sort of thing, I think that was a factor. I think we were sort of left alone to do it in that it takes a while to build up all the sort of in jokes and stuff like that, and that. Whereas I think a lot of newer shows would come along and try and do that from day one, which you can't really, because it takes time to do. So all that sort of stuff. I think also the time it was before really internet video. I mean, YouTube started while I was there, so people wouldn't have seen everything before. Whereas if something happens in a game now, it will be seen around the country in a lot of cases that day or the next day. Whereas the only place you could really see funny things happening at games was Soccer AM at the time. So I think there's quite a lot of factors. Yeah, involved.
I was going to touch on that, actually, mentioning YouTube. One of your roles on the show, you did the whole asking sort of people questions in public, and that later became such a big thing on YouTube. So I guess you could say you almost I don't know. Could you say Soccer AM created that kind of
trend? No, absolutely not. No, because I mean, it's going up to people and talking to them in the street isn't new. As in, like, people have been doing that on various shows, certainly that I remember as a kid, sort of thing. So no, I think it's just, I think it's quite a sort of tried, tested thing. There's a skill to it to get people to say funny things, but I think the general public are quite good at saying humorous things. So no, I mean, there were people who were doing it certainly before me, and like Max Fosh does it quite a lot now, sort of thing. But I've had a chat with him about it, and we're sort of just loving about it, going, it's not a new thing. We're not, it's nothing, like, because you're saying people will go up to him and go, you've stolen that from so and so. He's going, like, loads of people talk to people. Like, it's weird. I think that's been going for a while.
So that was one of your many roles at Soccer AM. I think you touched upon the fact that you used to book the guests, the music guests, that was.
Yeah.
Just guests in general, who was the best, would you say, to go out on the piss with? Because there was quite a heavy drinking culture around football at the time, and you could argue that extended its way to Soccer AM. So who was the best to go drinking with, would you say?
The best night out that we had, I think, was we went out with, there's a band that I'm certain you won't have heard of called Star Sailor, who were quite popular.
I've heard
around
of them.
Have you? Okay. They were quite popular around 2005, that sort of era, I'd guess, sort of thing. And their music's quite sort of soft and romantic and tender and all this sort of stuff. You think they're not going to be good fun on a night out, but they're absolutely brilliant. Still friends with them now. A couple of them came to my wedding. They're really good. So they're really good fun. They're really good fun. Who else is good? But a lot of them, it's like, it wouldn't necessarily be long session, but we went over and watched the Manchester Derby with Noel Gallagher in the pub and stuff like that. And I was, when I was a kid, I was so into Oasis. So that's quite exciting from sort of personal level. A lot of people were good fun. I mean, the thing was, we'd have, at the time it was very long hours. On Friday, I'd quite often come to work for like 7:30 in the morning, and I wouldn't leave till 1-3 a.m. on the Saturday morning, and then go to sleep for like 3 hours and come back to work. So you were quite tired. So it wasn't generally you going out into the night most of the time. It was like, I might go over for a few drinks and go home after that.
Right, fair enough. You touched upon Noel there. Have you got any other good Oasis anecdotes for the listeners?
I'm not sure, because I've sort of told quite a lot of them before on Happy Hour and a few other podcasts sort of thing. It's just Liam.
You just retells the Liam Gallagher in the cupboard story.
Yeah, so essentially, we're at a party, an Oasis party, and I think my memory's a bit hazy. I think it was when they won a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Brits between 2005-2007, that sort of era, I'd guess. And I don't think I'd ever met Liam before that day, but we were in this they'd hired out like a nightclub in London or something like that, a small nightclub thing. We're in there, and I chatted to him early in the evening. He sort of come over and started chatting because I knew you watched Soccer AM. And then later on, I was with Tim Lovejoy, and we got asked, and Liam came over and was chatting to us, and goes, oh man, we're talking about how good the previous Oasis album had been, because it was a really good one. And I was going, oh, you got to hear the new stuff. It's amazing. We go, all right, that'd be amazing. He goes, do you want to hear it now? Going, yeah, that'd be great. So he said, follow me. So we thought he was going to take us into a room and play us like from like a tape or a mini disc or whatever it would have been at the time, a CD, whatever. So that's what I thought was going to happen. But then he took us into like this pantry of this club. And he was going, right, he goes, right, okay, so the first song's like this. He goes, did, and he starts like singing this song. But he's not like just singing the words, he's like doing the instruments as well. So if there's like a drum bit, we go, and all this sort of thing. So he like did this song, but he did like the entire song. And at first I was still going, this is amazing. This is so cool. Then he goes, right, yeah, and there's another one that goes like this, and then did a second one. By like the third song of I've been locked in this pantry, I'm like, I've finished my drink. It was quite a good party.
How many did he do?
He did three. And then we sort of left. But by the third one, like, I'd quite want to go back to the party now. But it was still great. And he's a lovely guy. It was a strange evening out, but a lot of fun.
One thing I was going to touch on with your time at Soccer AM, isn't that what brought the opportunity to play at the new Wembley, one of the first games at the new Wembley? That must have been amazing, surely.
Yeah, it was incredible. And so I was, when you open a football stadium, it turns out, you can't just open the football stadium up and have the FA Cup final in case things go wrong. They have to test it. So they have a series of things called ramp-up events where they have to do it with smaller crowds, essentially, to check everything's working and to check everything's safe. And ours was the first public event that Wembley had had. I think they'd had like people playing on the pitch, stuff like that, and testing that sort of thing. But it was the first time they had it public. So they gave like 20,000 tickets away to local people to come along and watch this this tournament. There were like three teams. There was a Soccer AM team. I think there was like maybe an Umbro team or something like that. And it was loads of ex-players and sort of celebrity types. So we had our Soccer AM team. We had like various people playing, for Serge Kasabian and I'm trying to think who else, Ralph Little, literally coming. I got a photo somewhere, a few guys from Kasabian, a few musicians, a few actors, stuff like that, and us, and some footballers as well. And I was a little bit nervous because I was in goal, and I played like Sunday League in goal, but I'm by no means like exceptional at football, right? Well, it's a bit cracky. And it's a position you can quite easily humiliate yourself in goal if you do something terrible sort of thing. So it's not, if you're like winger, it's quite hard to have an absolute shocker unless you like miss an open goal or something like that. But you can easily have like a quiet game and be fine. It's a bit nervous. And John Aldridge was on our team. He used to play for Liverpool and he was one of my heroes growing up. So that was amazing. And before the game, so we're in the we'd finished Soccer AM because it was a Saturday afternoon. They played, so the other two teams played a game first while we were arriving. So we got a coach, and it was amazing because you get in there and you've sort of, for the last little bit, you've got like the sort of, I don't know, like sort of police escort, but you've got sort of like security sort of escort into the ground, and you go in, the coach goes like under the stadium into like this sort of underground tunnels that they've got under Wembley, and then you can walk from there. You get sort of dropped off right outside the changing rooms. So we're in the sort of changing rooms. And John Aldridge sort of, it was one of my heroes, goes, "Do you want me to warm you up, Robbie?" I'm like, yeah, okay.
And I'm
like, but I'm like, I don't really know what this means. Is he going to like give me a massage? Is he going to like do stretches or what? So he just basically, there was a little warm-up room out the back of the changing rooms, which was just AstroTurf, and literally in a room. And he just would just ping balls at me to catch, sort of thing, for like about 5-10 minutes. And I was going, hey, if like 15-year-old Robbie could see me now with John Aldridge like being balls to me before I play football at Wembley, be going, what has gone on, sort of thing. So it was incredible. It was unreal. We got to go and play. It was just incredible. Yeah.
Didn't you keep a clean sheet as well?
No, I don't think we played two games. No, I didn't. But we won the tournament. So I was the first goalkeeper to win a trophy at the new Wembley Stadium. But I think I conceded in both games. It was really fun. I remember at one point, there's like a goal my scramble. I was so out of position, like trying to get the ball, that I'd come right out of 6 yard box, sort of thing. And this, I remember Mark Bright just turning around, looking at me, and bursting out laughing, going, "What are you doing?" And I'm going, "I don't know, mate." But it was a really good one. I made a few decent saves. Saved like some 1-on-1 against Simon Jordan, who was Crystal Palace chairman at the time. It did all right, yeah. I think.
And am I right in saying you were lucky enough to go to the Champions League final in Istanbul?
So I've been to three Champions League finals when I was at Soccer AM. I went to the one that Arsenal lost to Barcelona in Paris.
Yeah.
Went to the Liverpool one in Istanbul. And I'm a Liverpool fan, so that was obviously amazing. And we went to the Liverpool ones in Athens where we lost to Milan. So that was less amazing, but still. still a nice trip out. But yeah, Istanbul was incredible.
Yeah, I imagine so.
I think I might be wrong in saying this, but you know, Istanbul, in that same week, is it true that you went on a ride with Steven Tyler of Aerosmith?
No, not exactly. I know what you're saying. When we were in, I know when we were at the Champions League final in Paris, we were staying for some reason at Euro Disney. because I don't know why PlayStation took us out there, and I don't know if that's where they get hotels. So we had the Champions League final, but the day before we went to Euro Disney, and there was an Aerosmith ride there, and me and Sheephead went on this ride, and it's amazing. If you ever, I don't know if it's still there, I presume it is, but if you ever get a chance to go to it, go on this ride, because it's, while you're queuing up, there's like a video of Aerosmith, and it's the most phoned in acting performance you'll ever see. They might as well at the end of it have gone, can we have our bag of money now, please? They're basically, there's some kind of premise about what's happening on it, and it's rubbish. Like, I can't remember what it is, but it's so lazily written that they're just basically just stood around just talking. It looks, it's amazing. It's so good to see. But we went on this, and it was a great ride. We went on it quite a few times. And anyway, so at the same party, the one with the Liam Gallagher party, the Oasis one, I was sat at a table. It was me, Sheephead, and Liam. And this woman came, or I thought it was a woman, came and sat down next to us and chatted to Liam. And they sort of looked over and go, oh, that's not a woman, that's a long-haired man. It's Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. And Joe was next to him. Joe loves Aerosmith. And this is Joe who worked with Soccer AM Sheephead. And he had one chance to speak to Steven Tyler. He went, hi, Steven. He said, I'm Joe. He goes, I went on your roller coaster at Euro Disney. I went, neat, isn't it? Me and Joe Perry went on it 37 times.
That's quality.
Great, yeah. Oh,
so, obviously, you mentioned going to Champions League finals. Did you go to much football just in general as a, either as a kid or...
So I'm a Liverpool fan, but basically I grew up in an island in Kent, and then my mates supported Liverpool, so I started supporting them. But then once you find out where Liverpool is, a few years later, you're like, that's very inconvenient. So I couldn't really go, I'd go occasionally, but I couldn't really regularly go to Liverpool. So I started going to Sittingbourne, who are my local non-league team. So I went to them for a few years and season ticket, I think, and went to like most games at home and occasional away games. So I used to do that. But now, like, international football, I've decided is my level, because I'm never going to go to Anfield or any other team every weekend because I've got too much stuff on. It takes up too much time to go week in, week out football for me. Even if it was round the corner, sort of thing, I don't think I could commit to it. But my family are all from Scotland. I'm a Scotland fan, and I can go to like 3 home qualifiers a year, because that's all there ever is at most, sort of thing like that. Scotland never qualified for tournaments until now, so it's never really been tested that I have to go to anything. So I'm kind of in this position where I sort of tend to, I mean, not in the last few years, obviously, it's been COVID, and before that, we just had a child, so I couldn't go up. But generally, I'll go to most Scotland home qualifiers.
Right. And just in general, being a Scotland fan, England, obviously most people would presume that you'd support England national team, but what is it like having to suffer through Scotland? They have been a truly terrible football team for the past 20 years. Obviously they qualified for the Euros, but what was it like before that, having to endure Craig Brown and
Bertie Vogts. Do you remember Bertie Vogts, the German guy?
German, I
mean, it's all right. I mean, because the good thing about supporting Scotland is the best we've ever done is qualified for a tournament. We've never got past the first round of any tournament, of a World Cup or Euros. So because of that, if you qualify, they're the joint best team ever. This Scotland team is the joint best Scotland team there has ever been. And because most of the time you're there or thereabouts up until the end, you're kind of... like, you've got a chance to be the equal best team ever. So, like, people are saying to me, oh, how do you think Scotland are doing the Euros? I'm like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. We're the best, joint best team ever. Whereas for England, because you've won the World Cup, you've got to, like, if you get knocked out of the semis, it's like, oh, no, we got knocked out of the semis. I go, like, yeah, but that, like, that'd be unreal if that just got a semi. So I think there's quite a good thing. I remember talking to a Blackburn fan who was saying the worst thing Blackburn ever did was winning that Premier League in like the early 90s. Because now it's like, do you remember that time, that one year we were good? Yeah. That was good, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah, something. So it's like, from then on, it's been miserable.
Yeah. It's same for me and Wilkes. We're both Barnsley fans. Ah. So we're doing really well in the Championship at the minute, but we're in and around teams like Bournemouth who expect to be in the Premier League. So yeah. When we're doing well, it's like, this is unbelievable. It's good to support a crap team, I think, because it makes the highs higher.
And I think I'm lucky in a way that I've supported Liverpool and Scotland. So I've had the winning the Champions League games, and I've also had the conceding losing to San Marino games, sort of thing like that. So there's a bit of there's a nice sort of mix, because I think there's good things in both, isn't it? Like, I know some of the most excited I've been at football games was like watching Sittingbourne like win in the FA Cup qualifying round, something against Dover, have been some of the best nights I've had at football, something. So, so I think the good thing about football is that you've got this sort of, that whatever level you're at, there's exciting things happening, sort of thing, and there's different targets. And it doesn't have to be winning the Champions League or the Premier League, sort of thing. It's whatever your level is at the time.
Yeah. So I guess to sort of finish off, you recently entered the world of YouTube and Twitch. So I guess what kind of inspired you to start up your YouTube channel and get that first video out about your amazing life?
So YouTube, I've got, so YouTube, essentially, I was at, there's a guy called Will Brazier who works for, he's a presenter, he does like stuff on Sporf and a few other sort of things. He does the Sky, I can't remember what the cool Soccer Saturday on the internet is. I can't remember what it's called now. But he does a lot of things these sort of things. We were at Watford's training ground doing something with Troy Deeney. I was filming for him. And he was saying, you should do a YouTube channel. And I was like, I was mates with Jack May and I knew the other YouTuber occasionally that I'd met, sort of thing. But I didn't watch YouTube beyond Jack. I didn't watch any YouTubers. I didn't know who any YouTubers were, really. I'd go on YouTube if I needed to change to fix a smoke alarm or something like that. I'd go on and find out, how do I do this? I think I wouldn't go on it to watch people.
Yeah.
But and my view was that it was for younger people, essentially. I was like, okay, if you're in your teens or 20s sort of thing, those are the people who watch YouTube. But my friend Will said, so I said to him, I think I'm probably a bit old for it. And he went, he said, I'm not being, I don't want to be rude. He said, but it's, I know what it's like being 18 and starting uni, because every September there's 10,000 vlogs about being 18 and starting uni. He goes, I don't really know what it's like being middle-aged, if you know what I mean. So I said, so I thought, okay, so I'll do a video a week for 6 months and see if I enjoy it. And then, because I think you've got to commit to something properly. You can't just do a little bit and go and judge it on that sort of thing. So I did that, enjoyed it. Carried on from there.
Great stuff.
Well, in terms of the Twitch, I think the Football Manager is really interesting, because if you go into them Twitch streams, it's almost as if you are at a game.
Like, yeah.
It is ridiculously fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's a good game to do on it, because you don't have to, if you're doing it, if you're not trying to be a pro at Football Manager, like there's Football Manager streamers who are there because they're great at Football Manager, whereas mine's, that's not really the angle we're going for.
Yeah.
It's quite an easy game to stream, in that you can pay attention to the chat and build that sort of community and get that atmosphere going. And I think the one thing I'm really good at in life is, I'm not necessarily the greatest cameraman or editor or whatever sort of thing, but I'm very good at telling a story, and I've done a lot of work, a lot of reading and learning about how to construct stories and all that. So I think that's another thing that Socrane was good at. It got that sort of gang mentality that felt like you're in a sort of club sort of thing. So I think I'm quite good at building up a sort of community and creating the narrative for what's happening. Like you can sort of, there's so many little things that are going on it, like player redemption arc sort of thing. Someone who's become good, this youngster you might have bought in, or someone that you hate, or all this sort of thing. So you can quite often build up. We've been lucky to get quite a few cup finals, but it is exciting, particularly if there's a big game. What we will do is we'll watch the entire match, the full 90 minutes at normal speed sort of thing of an evening, like on a Friday night, and everyone will watch it. And I was on at the weekend. I was a guest on the panel of the Streamer Showdown, which, like, for those who don't know, is like this big Football Manager tournament where all big Football Manager streamers compete to win this sort of thing. And the way they do the games, it's like games, and they're sped up, like the players go faster than they would, sort of thing. And the games are can be over quite quickly. And it works for what they're doing, but I think I'd much rather have this sort of immersive thing where you're watching a full 90-minute game. What I'd love to do, but it wouldn't work because they bring out a new game each year, is what I've thought about doing in the past, is do a Football Manager season in real time. So if there's a game on a Tuesday night, we stream it live on the Tuesday night sort of thing, and just go from there. I think that would be really good. Which I might look at, maybe we'll look at doing next year. I don't know. I'll consider it. There's a lot of different ways you can do it. But so I've really enjoyed the Football Manager thing, and I think I like having that big fun atmosphere during it and everyone getting involved.
Have you got anything to add, Will?
No, I think that wraps us up nicely, actually. So thanks very much, Robbie, for coming on. We really do appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me. I hope this gets you a star in your A level.
I'm sure it will.
Just send it to me if they've got any problems with that.
We will do.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you at a later date.
Brilliant.